All right, good morning. The Arizona Board of Health Examiners, Behavioral Health Examiners, will now come to order. It is 9:05 on February 11th, 2022. My name is Patricia Dobrath, and I'm the board's chairperson. Could we have a roll call, please?
Kimberly Bailey. Robert Charles. Mary Coonrod.
Present.
Cedric Davis.
Good morning.
Patricia Dobrath.
Here.
Lynette Hennigan.
Here.
Megan Kramer.
Here.
Cassandra Parr, Mark Shin.
Good morning.
Gerald Szymanski, Antoine Trotter.
Present.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to ask everyone in attendance to make sure your cell phones are off or set to silent, please. Throughout the meeting, if anybody needs to use a, hold on. Hopefully this is not a predictor. All right, if anybody needs to use the facilities, they are out the hall across from the elevators. There's also vending machines out the door in the hallway as well. This is an open meeting, and it is being recorded. The audio from the meeting will be posted to the board's website. As such, we appreciate everyone's assistance in speaking clearly. Clearly, I'm trying to do that. And into the microphones. At this point, I will ask the board members and board staff to please introduce themselves. Mr. Trotter?
Antoine Trotter, public member.
Dr. Lynette Hennigan, professional member.
Kimberly Bailey, professional member.
Doc Davis, professional member.
Mark Shen, professional member.
Mary Coonrod, public member.
Megan Kramer, public member.
Aaron Yabu, deputy director.
Jared Carver, investigations manager.
Zavala, executive director.
Mona Baskin, assistant attorney general, representative.
All right, and our first order of business will be a review of our minutes. There are January 7th general meeting minutes. Is there a motion to approve?
Davis moves it.
Bailey second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next on our agenda is number 4, our consent agenda. Unless anyone would like to discuss a case that's listed on the consent agenda, the board has reviewed the materials and will vote to approve the consent agenda as it appears. So 4B is our cases recommended for dismissal with a letter of concern. Mitchell Blocker, is there anybody who wishes to pull this matter and address the board? All right. Is there a motion to dismiss with a letter of concern?
Davis moves it.
In second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Oppose? Motion carries. 4C are our cases recommended for release from consent agreements. C1, Aguaya. 2, Ahmed. 3, Bracco. 4, Elder. 5, Johnson. And 6, Masonet. Is there a motion to release from the consent agreements?
Davis moves it.
Is there a second?
Bailey second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Oppose? Motion carries. And then we have 4E, our case recommended for opening a complaint and accepting the proposed signed disciplinary consent agreement. E1, Soto, is there anybody who wishes to pull that matter? All right. Is there a motion to open a complaint and accept the proposed signed disciplinary consent agreement?
Davis moves it.
Hennigan second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
And that will conclude our consent agenda. Moving to agenda item number 7. This is the time and place scheduled for the board to review disciplinary matters. They will be heard by the board pursuant to authority given to us by ARS 32-3281. Please be aware that we have read all the materials submitted. During the course of the meeting, if it's necessary to refer to clients, including those that may be complainants, please use initials only. Those licensees or applicants on today's agenda received by mail a board meeting notice, which included a list of potential actions the board could take once we reach the deliberations phase. This list is not exclusive, and there may be other options that the board considers. The board will first hear a brief summary from board staff. Once staff has done, other interested parties, including the licensee, and their attorney and the complainant, if applicable, will be given an opportunity to address the board. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask that those speaking not take time repeating information we've already received. You and your legal counsel, if applicable, will collectively be given the same time to address the board as board staff did in presenting the report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please remember the board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disorderly conduct. Those violating this policy will be removed from the meeting room. Once the board concludes their discussions with the parties, we'll move into our deliberations. While you're free to stay and listen, we do ask that you not interrupt, as it's our time to talk amongst ourselves. And we will first go to 7C, Ms. Franklin. And I believe we have to get somebody on the phone for that matter. Is that correct, Ms. Zavala?
Yes, Madam Chair. And just to be clear, this is not the complainant, it's the client.
And then is the professional and Mr. Cohen present?
I am.
All right, please come forward.
Hello.
Hello, this is Patricia. I'm the board's chairperson, and we are getting ready to hear the Franklin matter. It was my understanding, as a party to this case, that you wanted to be heard by the board, possibly?
I did, yes.
All right. And as a former client, we do respect confidentiality, so we'll be referring to you by your initials. I believe that's MD. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, and so it's myself and board members, board staff present, as well as Ms. Franklin's attorney, Mr. Cohen. And we'll first hear a brief summary from board staff, and then if you wish to address the board, you'll have the same amount of time or up to 5 minutes, whichever is greater, and then Mr. Cohen will have a chance to address the board as well.
Okay, I am not sure how long my statement really is. So I will just read until you stop me, I suppose.
All right. That sounds good. If you could mute your phone until it's your turn, that would be appreciated.
Sure will. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Zavala.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this matter is before us today based on a complaint that the board received in November regarding unprofessional conduct. During the course of the investigation, licensee and her attorney contacted the board offering to voluntarily surrender her license based on the allegations. So what we have before you today is a consent agreement for the voluntary surrender of the licensee's license, which is considered a revocation. The following conclusions of law have been included. ARS 32-3261-16K, engaging in any conduct or practice that is contrary to recognized standards of ethics in the behavioral health profession as it relates to the ACA Code of Ethics A63, non-professional interactions or relationships, as well as ARS 32-3251-16L, engaging in any conduct, practice, or condition that impairs the ability of the licensee to safely and competently practice the licensee's profession, as well as ARS 32-3251-16T, disclosing a professional confidence or privileged communication except as may otherwise be required by law or permitted by a legally valid written release. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions for Ms. Zavala? All right. MD, you would now have up to 5 minutes to address the board if you want to read your statement.
All right, I sure will. Thank you. Thanks for giving me the time to speak and share the effects of April's blurring of the lines of our therapeutic relationship. I say blurring, but the truth is the lines were obliterated. I never got the chance in the outside world to put my tools of recovery into action. I entered treatment seeking help for betrayal trauma and was already feeling unsafe. I think that made me a perfect target for April. She was my safe person while I was there and knew it. She seemed pleased to hear it. And I felt special that she asked if I was. The first 2 weeks out were difficult, and I eventually reached out by mail, sending an anonymous gift. She called from her work number to thank me, and that was the beginning of our relationship. The gift I sent was a carton of sparkling water, a secret we shared from my time as her patient. She would sneak them into my sessions, instruct me not to tell anyone so as not to get her into trouble. Upon leaving, she praised me for keeping this secret. The first several calls she made to me were from her work number and the emails from her work address, but soon she was contacting me from her own private number with emails, phone calls, and texts. I was hooked from the beginning and began to spend hours checking for new correspondence. Within a month's time, we were touching base regularly, discussing music, relationships, work, and personal issues. The interactions had turned decidedly unprofessional. I remember being excited to get the first call from her cell number. She seemed so put together, professional, and peaceful. She was everything I wanted to be and knew it, and now I was part of her inner circle. Several of the texts and emails were sharing of favorite songs with meanings to her. I would spend hours crafting the perfect reply so she would think I was worth sharing such intimate details. Corresponding with her slowly took over my life. When she began sharing details of her intimate relationships, I felt uncomfortable, but also special. When she shared stories and emails of her troubles at work, I felt conflicted. The treatment facility had given me so much, but I felt I needed to side with her in every conflict. Her sharing of inter-office memos and emails gave me a sense of being her confidant and friend. My circle of healing was becoming smaller and smaller. I wanted to be wanted, and she knew how to feed that by sharing her personal life with me. My betrayal trauma in my marriage was out of control, and instead of using my tools to deal with it, I relied on my friendship with April. I trusted her with everything and avoided the mess in my own life. Her relationship became all-consuming. The more eager I was for her attention, the more she opened up more of her life to me. It got to the point I would dread waking up and looking at my phone in the morning. There were so many messages, texts, and voicemails telling me my inbox was full, asking to get current, messages saying she had something important to share. When my husband eventually chose residential treatment to deal with his sex addiction, I made a trip back to Tucson to clear my head with the person I was upon leaving treatment. While I was there, she told me where to stay, what sleep schedule to be on, where and when to meet her, even if those times conflicted with the short 30 minutes I had to speak to my husband, who was only allowed this small contact with me from treatment. I began to get the impression she wanted me to have no one to count on but her. I thought I had traveled back to Tucson to reclaim my post-treatment self, but it began to seem more and more I was there for her. At this point, I had lost everyone and everything I needed to be, and needed to be her everything, or she would abandon me as well. As I got to know her on a personal level, I knew that underneath her positivity was a person who could be cruel with words and actions, as I had heard her be when discussing colleagues, partners, and even patients. She was always the victim in every situation. I didn't want to be on the receiving end of her anger. When she started sharing stories of sex and infidelity in her own life, it was truly traumatizing, considering my own husband's infidelity. She constantly shared stories of patients she was treating, famous names, specific incidences, photos, and videos of residents. She was always the hero and the savior, and I was expected to recognize the beauty in every interaction and heap on the praise. Her own personal cheering section. She often called me sweetness and beautiful, and I responded in kind because I was desperate for attention. When I saw the shrink next door, I finally realized this was the story of me, and I contacted Tell, Therapy Exploitation Link Line, who encouraged me to tell my own therapist, and she decided to file a report. I knew she would have to, and at first I protested. I felt I would be ruining April's life. As time passed, I realized she's ruined her own life, and for the time being, mine as well. My own neglect and facing the problems in my marriage have left it hanging by a thread. I trust no one and avoid people and places at all costs. I am unable to work or be alone. My treatment tools are scattered, and I don't know how to find them. I placed all my trust in one person who wanted nothing more than to shore herself up at my expense. I hesitated to make a statement today because being intimately involved in April's plans to relocate to California, I knew she planned to seek licensure there. Arizona was always just the backup. I am dismayed and horrified to find out that she is indeed currently licensed in California. The thought that she is still in a position to hurt others with her dangerously unprofessional behavior frustrates me beyond belief. She treated me like a child.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but you are getting close to your time. So
I'm almost finished. She treated me like a child and made me think I had no one so she could be my everything. In closing, I want to make sure you know, all of you, but especially April Frank, support this complaint and whatever action comes from it. It is my deepest hope you are never again given the ability to practice and take protected information and to strip another human being of their humanity for your personal gain. I hope I am the last. I hope you get the help you so desperately need. I hope beyond hoping that sharing my story today brings closure for me and gives me the strength I need to move forward with the ability to repair what you, April Franklin, have so carelessly and selfishly broken. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thanks.
Do board members have any questions? Mr. Cohen, you would have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you, members of the board. Franklin's not here today. She's made a decision to surrender her life and be here to heard statement and certainly respect her feelings about what she is hearing. She understood it. I could speak to those issues that I haven't really accomplished. I don't want my silence in that regard to be interpreted as anything substantive, but I want to be very interested in the point about Ms. Franklin that she has the purpose of living life, accepted full responsibility for a really whole life and surrender fully cooperated with the board. Best served by thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions for Mr. Cohen?
I just have one. Do you know whether she's still licensed in California?
I honestly don't know the answer.
Madam Zavala?
It's our understanding that she is still licensed in California. And with that said, that would have been my second, if you were to accept this, to have a second motion to refer to California.
Thank you, Ms. Zavala. Any other questions for Mr. Cohen? All right, this is our time to talk amongst ourselves, so we ask that you not interrupt. Ms. Kramer?
I think it's pretty straightforward, and I thank MD and the complainant for bringing this to our attention, and I would move that we accept the proposed signed consent agreement.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion passes. Is there a motion to refer to California?
So moved.
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. MD, we appreciate you being here and sharing your story. This will conclude the matter. If you have any questions, you can call board staff afterwards. But we have accepted the proposed consent agreement for the surrender of Ms. Franklin's license.
Thank you. I appreciate it all. Thanks for hearing me today.
Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. It's nice to see you out of retirement every once in a while.
Thank you.
We will go to 7A, Ms. Bolte. And Ms. McClellan, you're appearing on behalf of the licensee. All right, and can we have a brief summary from board staff, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. In November of 21, licensee contacted the board and self-reported a possible impairment to practice safely. In subsequent conversations, a licensee offered to voluntarily surrender her license. This matter is before the board to open a complaint and consider accepting the signed proposed consent agreement. The violation would be ARS 32-3251-16L, engaging in any conduct, practice, or condition that impairs the ability of the licensee to safely and competently practice the licensee's profession. And that's all I have, unless you have questions for me.
Do board members have any questions? Ms. McClellan, you would have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. As indicated, this is a result of a separate, a self-report. The licensee understood her medical condition. She was already planning on later this year to retire, so that has just been moved up, and hence the surrender of the license and the signed agreement. So we just ask that you accept that and vote to accept the consent.
Are there any questions for Ms. McClellan? All right, this will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. Ms. Quinard?
Again, I think this one's pretty straightforward, so if no one has any other ideas, I would move to open a complaint and accept the proposed signed consent agreement.
Are you okay with one more motion, Ms. Ball? Okay. Is there a second?
Shen, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey?
Aye.
Mary Coonrod?
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you so much for being here. We will go to 7E, Ms. Martin Doring. Ms. Carvis, are you appearing on her behalf?
Yes.
All right. Can we hear a brief summary from board staff, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. This matter comes before you only to consider opening up a complaint. Brief summary, Ms. Martin-Noring is currently on a consent agreement. In December, my compliance officer notified me that her license had expired. She was in that 90-day period where it could be reinstated, but she was also at that time didn't have a license. My compliance officer shared with me that she was also in private practice, so there was a concern. I reached out personally to Ms. Martin-Doring to let her know that her license had expired and that she should not be practicing. After subsequent emails, it appeared that she was not being transparent or forward with the board in her responses. With that said, we did find out, additionally knew that she had a second job. We got her personnel records there. The intent behind getting those personnel records was to see if she was using her license while it expired. Not only did we find out that she was using her license while it was expired, even though she had said she wasn't, we also found out that there were some significant issues that particular agency had in regards to her behavior. The areas of concern particularly were documentation, frequent deregulation and emotional reactivity, not holding appropriate boundaries, using non-approved strategies and disassociation. And again, I bring this before the board today for the board members to consider opening a complaint so we can do a full investigation of this matter. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Do board members have any questions for Ms. Lala? Carvis, you would have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Sure. Ms. Martin-Doring looks forward to the opportunity to be able to respond to the allegations. She does acknowledge that there was an issue with her license expiring, and she did. I believe she is current now and has renewed that. It's my understanding that she does not believe that she was actually actively practicing without a license. And when I spoke with her, she was not aware of any issues with that particular agency that she was working with. So obviously, once we receive the complaint and materials, we will address those issues more specifically when we have documentation to do so. But I understand, obviously, given the nature of the situation, why the board would want to look into that. So we understand that we'll do that and preparing a response and addressing those concerns.
Thank you, Ms. Carvis. Do board members have any questions for Ms. Carvis? All right, let's be our time to talk amongst ourselves. Dr. Bailey?
Yeah, I think just considering the comments made this morning warrants an investigation so we can see what else is happening. Forward. So I move that we open a complaint.
Hennigan, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Carvis, for being here. We will now go to 7I. Ms. Frendenberg, is the complainant or licensee present? All right. Brief summary from board staff.
This matter is before the board for review, consideration, and action regarding accepting the proposed signed interim consent agreement. On 12/31/21, licensee received a DUI. On 1/9/22, it was reported that licensee's supervisor that it appeared like licensee was under the influence. On 1/11/22, board staff contacted licensee via phone, and licensee reported the following. Licensee confirmed she was intoxicated at work. Licensee admitted to having an issue and wants to get ahead of it. Licensee expressed interest in entering into an interim consent agreement. On 1/18/22, licensee did sign and return a proposed interim consent agreement, and it's for the board members' consideration today. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions for Ms. Zavala? All right. It's our time to talk amongst ourselves. And Mr. Trotter.
I'm motion to accept the ICA.
There a second?
Bailey, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you. Ms. Vella, do we have word on the next matter, or should we?
Could we call out that missing something?
7D, Rosalie Hasseltine. Is the licensee here? Do you want to give some time? Okay.
So that will take us to 7G and H. Ms. Tully, I believe we have to get some people on the phone, correct?
That's correct. We need to open up the conference line. And for the record, I believe there is one complainant here, and I believe one complainant will be on the phone as well as the licensee and the attorney.
Okay.
Welcome to Lumen Conferencing.
And would you be Mr. Faction?
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you.
What was that?
Your passcode is confirmed.
Mr. Anderson?
Anderson? Oh, sorry.
When you hear the tone, you will be the second person to join the meeting.
All right, good morning. We have just called the Tully matter. Is Ms. Tully and Ms. Stark on the line?
Hi, good morning. This is Sarah Stark.
And is your client also present?
She will be joining. I'm not sure if she's on yet. Ms. Tully, are you there?
All right, we'll give a minute for Ms. Tully. Ms. Begsgard, are you on the line?
Still waiting
for a couple minutes
for both the complainant as well as Ms. Tully.
And Mr. Anderson is in person, and I apologize. I was reading too quickly, so I apologize. Can I ask who just joined the call?
This is Janine Badsgard.
Thank you so much. I'm Patricia Dobretz, the board's chairperson, and we are getting ready to hear the matter in just a minute.
Okay, thank you so much.
And then did Ms. Tully just join as well?
Yes, thank you. This is Ms. Tully.
Okay. So again, my name is Patricia. I'm the board's chairperson. We have just called the two matters on our agenda, 7G and H. We have all of the board members that are participating today and board staff in person, along with one of the complainants, Mr. Anderson, for the 2021-0145 complaint. The complainant for 2021-0120, Ms. Begsgard, is on the phone participating, along with the licensee and her attorney, Ms. Stark. I would ask everybody who's on the phone to please mute their phone unless you are speaking. And the way we'll proceed is we will hear a brief summary from board staff, and then the complainants will each have a chance to address the board equal to the amount of time that Ms. Zavala takes to present the report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. And then the licensee and her attorney will have an opportunity to address the board at that time. Can we start with the summary from board staff, please?
Madam Chair, members of the board, so I just want to, first off, for the individuals involved in the complaint in regards to the licensee attorney and the two complainants, this report was 71 pages long and I think a total of about 1,000 pages. So the board members have had all of the material and have read it. I just want to clarify, there was a little bit of an error in the analysis. There were two complaints, and we're hearing those two complaints together, but I want to be clear that complaint number 2021-0120, our board does not have jurisdiction over. It's conduct that occurred in Utah, and so I would ask that even though we have a complainant on the phone, I think it would be beneficial that she stay on the phone to hear the other matter, but at this time, I would like the board members to consider dismissing that complaint before I move forward with the analysis.
Is there a motion to dismiss 2021-0120?
Bailey, so moved.
Is there a second?
Trotter, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Zavala.
Thank you, members. So at this time, I'm gonna jump around a little bit on the analysis because I really want to talk first and foremost in regards to the biggest issue that our board has in regards to the conduct that has occurred. And that would be in the basis of the misrepresentation piece, and that's ARS 32-3251-16-CI, making any oral or written misrepresentation of a fact to secure or attempt to secure the issuance or renewal of a license. This recommendation is based on the following. On 7/15/19, licensee submitted an initial application with the board for her LCSW licensure in the state of Arizona, via endorsement based on her LCSW license in Utah. Licensee made a material misrepresentation when answering no to the following background question. Other than complaints filed by this board, have you ever been or are you currently the subject of any complaint, investigation, or disciplinary action against your license, certificate, registration, or membership by any state regulatory board, any professional or occupational credentialing authority, or any professional association in Arizona or any other state? If so, please provide copies of the complaint and all final actions. Specifically, licensee did not disclose the complaints that led to the denial of her Utah renewal application. Based on a 4/18/19 email from licensee to DOPL, licensee was aware of the Utah complaint at least 3 months prior to submitting her application to our board. It is concerning that despite licensee's admission that she was aware of the Utah complaints, licensee chose not to disclose the complaints on her 7/15/19 application. Additionally, licensee signed her application under the penalty of perjury, which included the following. I certify under penalty of perjury that all information contained in this renewal application, including all supporting documentations, is true and correct to the best of my knowledge and belief, with full knowledge that all statements made in this renewal application may be grounds for refusal or subsequent revocation or suspension of my license. Despite her certification under penalty of perjury, licensee submitted her renewal application with the above referenced misrepresentation. At that time, she submitted her renewal application and said that it had already been submitted to the board. But in fact, it had already been submitted to the board because we found out about it from Utah, not from licensee. I kind of want to talk a little bit about this because this is not something that our board sees very often. Just to be clear, when an applicant applies for licensure, there's going to be 9 questions in a background information. If one of those is marked yes, that will trigger an investigation, whatever that investigation looks like. Sometimes it's getting personnel records. Sometimes it's reviewing a criminal offense from years ago that we sign off on. And in some cases, there's a disclosed some kind of an investigation. I want to be very clear with the board that if at the time she renewed her, at the time she submitted her application, if the board would have been aware of the concerns that Utah had with the information that was before them, it would have been grounds for a full investigation. It's truly my belief as the executive director that information would have come to the board, and very likely she would have been denied for unprofessional conduct. So it is concerning that we issued her a license based on her not being transparent with that application. At this time, I want to go ahead and move your attention to the other violation, and that is ARS 32-3251-16L, engaging in any conduct, practice, or condition that impairs the ability of the licensee to safely and competently practice the licensee's profession. This recommendation is based on the following. On 10/19/20, licensee's Utah LCSW renewal application was initially denied based on the following. The division may refuse to renew the license of a license if the licensee has been engaged in unprofessional conduct. These provisions encompass dual relationships, conflict of interest, exploitation, use of technology policies, consent, competence, boundaries, confidentiality, and recognized knowledge. Licensee engaged in grossly negligent practice when she used curse and or demon revocations and exorcisms during therapy sessions with patients suffering from DID. On or about 3/1/19, licensee attempted to do an exorcism on client 2 when it was believed that 2 of the client's altar parts, Pythia and Snake, were demons. On or about 3/13/19, licensee attempted to exorcise the demon from client 1 and had minister perform an exorcism of sorts on client 1. During this, both licensee and minister put their hands on client 1's stomach and navel area. On 3/20/19, licensee used Masonic curse breaking scripts and chants with client 1. On or about 3/21/19, licensee used a druid book for druid curse revocations with client 3 to revoke curses when client 3 was in the womb. Licensee used demon revocation therapy in client 3's children after Ego B, which caused client 3 to think that there were demons stuck in her throat and started stabbing her throat with toothpicks. Licensee admitted to intern at her clinic that she used Freemason curse revocation techniques with clients and gave her a book on curse revocations. Licensee encouraged intern to use these techniques with her patients. Licensee displayed a pattern of unprofessional conduct when she entered into and engaged into a dual relationship with her vulnerable DID patients. On or about 1/13/19, client 3 attended church with licensee and also attended licensee's baptism. Licensee talked about often exchanged texts with client 1 that included personal facts about her divorce. Licensee suggested minister help client 1 in a session that involved curse breaking and touched certain parts of her body. Licensee held a survivor's group at her home with some of her patients on Sunday nights. Some of the licensee's DID patients participated in Marco Polo play therapy when they were in their young or little therapy group sessions. Licensee allowed non-participants in these therapy session groups to review the session without getting proper consent from the participants. Licensee's use of curse and or demon revocation therapy is not based on recognized knowledge relevant to social work and created confusion, fear, and anxiety. On 11-2020, licensee filed for an agency review in the matter of the denial of her renewal application. On 3-10-21, Commerce ALJ remanded the matter back to the division. The division was then instructed to give licensee the investigative file and to consider licensee's written response in making its decision in its investigation of the renewal application issue. On 6-11-21, licensee withdrew her renewal application while the division was investigating licensee. On 7-14-21, licensee reported to the NPDB for withdrawal of renewal application while under investigation. Licensee's representation during the investigative interview is such. Some of the chants and prayers licensee performed with client 2 could have been prayer of release for Freemasons and their descendants and strategic prayer strategy. Licensee would perform chants, prayers, or counter language in respect with client 1 came up with and the traumatic beliefs that they had imposed on her. There are expert opinions for incorporating that kind of language with ritual above victims such as Ellen Lacter and a clinical psychologist. Around 2-19 through 3-19, licensee worked with client 1 using counter language as part of the ego state for a few times. Client 3 had specific Masonic abuse that would come out from some of her parts. They performed religious chants or prayers because of the content her parts were bringing up in session, which was specific detailed Masonic rituals. Licensee's use of chants on a client's cognitive reframing process. Licensee does not currently use any chants, prayers, or counter language with Arizona clients. Licensee believes there are other modalities that can accomplish the same thing that are more standard and well-known that she would choose to use. Minister had specialty in helping ritual abuse survivors in a chaplain role, and licensee believes 2 of them met Minister. Because of what Client 1 had gone through, Client 1 and Minister arranged to meet at one point. When asked whether Minister was involved in Client 1's treatment, licensee indicated that Client 1 and Minister arranged to meet on their own, and licensee was there as a support person one time when they met. As it relates to Client 1, 2, and 3, licensee acknowledged that she probably introduced them to one another. During the Utah investigation, licensee acknowledged having text exchanged with at least one client. When asked if licensee had clients on her social media in the past, she indicated the following. Before the NASW rules came out, because of the small community, it was not uncommon for therapists to have social media contact with clients. While there could be issues or concern with confidentiality, culturally it was acceptable by professionals. The Code of Ethics has small allowances for small communities. Sometimes members of the survivor support group would meet in person in licensee's office. There were clients and non-clients from the ex-Mormon group participating in Marco Polo groups. When asked if there was a concern of clients and non-clients being in a non-therapeutic group resulting in a breach of confidentiality, licensee indicated it was a complicated question. Licensee believes it would be accurate to say she held support groups with clients and non-clients, but it's not something she would do now. Licensee believes it would be accurate to say she befriended clients on Facebook before all those guidelines were clear and because it was not an uncommon practice. Licensee does not believe it would be accurate to say she had clients attend her baptism because it was a community event and a personal choice to attend. Licensee's conduct in Utah that led to the initial denial of her Utah renewal application is concerning as it indicates an impaired ability of the licensee to safely and competently practice. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you, Ms. Sabella. Do board members have any questions for board staff? Ms. Bagsgard? As a party to this matter, I would give you an opportunity to address the board if you'd like. We did have to dismiss the one matter because we don't have jurisdiction
over actions that took place in Utah. But if you wanted to address the board, this would be your time to do so. You would have up to 10 minutes, and I just ask that you not repeat anything from the materials we already have.
My husband and I have already submitted a written statement and supporting documentation. And I've been advised by my Utah attorney to not make any further statements or answer questions because the matter is under current litigation.
Okay. We respect that. Thank you so much. Mr. Anderson, you would have up to 10 minutes to address the board now if you'd like.
Thank you. My statement will probably only be a couple minutes. I do reference a couple of things, but again, it's only a couple minutes.
That's fine.
Thank you to the board for allowing me to make a statement here today. The reason I filed my complaint against Ms. Tully is because I believe, unfortunately, she has caused significant damage to former clients and may have harm on her current. I don't believe Ms. Tully is doing these things intentionally. I believe she feels she is solving problems and improving them. Instead, I believe Ms. Tully is not. According to the Utah Licensing Board, Ms. Tully engaged in habitual and routine violations of social worker ethics. She had dual relationships with clients. She performed what are essentially exorcisms on clients in order to, quote-unquote, relieve them of Masonic curses. She smoked marijuana with clients prior to therapy sessions. In at least one instance, she pulled a gun out during a therapy session and began waving it around, no doubt petrifying her client. Perhaps most disturbing, Ms. Tully's therapeutic practices led to a client stabbing themselves in the throat. Again, this is according to the Utah Social Work Board, not me. Reviewing the evidence for all of this, Utah Social Work Board denied Ms. Tully's license renewal application, stating, "Your pattern of using demons and chant revocations with an extremely vulnerable DID patient group shows a genuine lack of judgment and awareness on your part that supports the conclusion that the best interests of the public are not served by renewing your license as an LCSW in the state of Utah. This reckless and dangerous form of therapy, not based on recognized knowledge relevant to social work, created confusion, anxiety, and fear in a number of your clients. In one especially alarming case, one of your patients started stabbing her throat because she believed she had demons in her throat after going through demon revocation sessions with them." Elsewhere, Ms. Tully has promoted the conspiracy theory of satanic ritual abuse. She claims that there are multi-generational satanic cults that routinely engage in bizarre forms of abuse and mind control in order to gain absolute power over their victims. In fact, Ms. Tully herself has claimed to be a victim of such a cult. Going so far as to state, the cult branded her uterus with satanic symbols. In Utah, Ms. Tully ran group therapy sessions. 80% of participants, according to her, were victims of ritual abuse and mind control. I understand the gravity of revoking a social worker's license. It's not something to take lightly. Social workers do incredibly important work, and simply put, there aren't enough of them as it is. But taking together Ms. Tully's past actions, her expressed beliefs and QAnon-like conspiracy theories, as well as her own compromised mental state, I regretfully feel that Ms. Tully is not able to abide by the social worker code of ethics, no matter how badly she may wish to. In conclusion, I agree with the Utah Social Worker Board. Best interests of the public are not served by Ms. Tully maintaining licensure. Not in Utah, not in Arizona, not anywhere. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Do board members have any questions for Mr. Anderson? All right. Ms. Stark, this would be you and your client's opportunity to address the board. You have up to 10 minutes together to do so.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Sarah Stark, and I am counsel for Ms. Tully. I will briefly address the allegation of misrepresentation on the license application and then discuss a little bit about the other allegations as well. At the time of the application for her Arizona license, Ms. Tully had been informed by an investigator in Utah that there was a complaint However, the investigator was evasive about the specific allegations, and she was unaware of anything specific about the investigation or the process and had not received any complaint documents at that time. She consulted with her Utah attorney, and she believed at the time, after receiving legal advice, that this was an appropriate response to the question on the Arizona application based on the information that they had been given at that time from Utah. She certainly understands the concerns that the board has and offers this information not as an excuse, but as an explanation for her mindset and analysis at that time. She did rely on the advice of her legal counsel based on both of their understanding of the Utah proceedings at that time. She did not intend to misrepresent the situation or mislead the board. She just didn't have much information about the specifics of the allegations and certainly nothing that would have been able to be provided to the board in the form of documentation. And with regard to the remaining allegations, we will not be providing any substantive response or discussion about these as they are linked to the allegations that are currently the subject of a pending lawsuit in Utah. If the board has specific questions about any of those allegations, perhaps we can go into an executive session and discuss some of that, but at this time in a public session, we do not feel that we are able to discuss those allegations substantively. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stark. Do board members have any questions for the licensee or her attorney?
I have a question. This is Megan Kramer. Were you the attorney who advised her, Ms. Stark, that she could answer no on whether there were complaints pending?
No, Ms. Tully was being represented by an attorney in Utah who was assisting her with the investigation there.
Okay. And is there any...
I was not representing her at that time.
Is there a letter or an email or anything, you know, that memorialized that conversation that she had with her attorney?
I do not know. I'm sure we could ask the attorney. Ms. Tully, do you have any recollection of that without getting too much into, you know, privileged attorney-client communication?
It was like an in-person meeting, so I don't know if there's an email or not, but I can definitely look.
That's okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for the licensee and her attorney? All right, this will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. So we ask everybody participating by phone to please mute your devices, and we ask to not be interrupted during this time. Dr. Bailey, I believe you're leading this discussion.
I am. I'll first just say lots of concerning information built into the investigation, but my focus in conversing with you all is more on the misrepresentation on the license. Because I feel that if the application had been filled out and attested to appropriately, we would have gone through our processes. And if we had had the opportunity, as Ms. Stark kind of relayed, if there was nothing behind the complaint, we would have seen that and we could have made a decision appropriately so at that time. So, Ms. Kramer, I very much appreciate your question, and I'm following up with, it doesn't matter what the outcome of that would have been for me. The idea that the decision was made to not answer that appropriately based on an interpretation, I feel is inappropriate based on the spirit behind an endorsement for a license. So,
and I would just add to that you are at this point aware of a complaint to the point where you've
absolutely
hired an attorney and met with them in person, then you are clearly aware that something is pending against you.
Right. Yeah, and I'll just clarify. I mean, I asked the question because we have in the past used that sort of as a mitigating factor. It strains reason to think that any attorney would recommend answering no to that question. So I just wanted to be clear they've had an opportunity to get us information. I don't see that as any basis to mitigate in this case.
I'm in full agreement as well. Based on that, I did find, I mean, just sticking with that, those facts, I did find for the violations of impaired judgment, ARS 3232.51.16L, engaging in conduct, practice, or condition that impairs the ability of a licensee to safely and confidently practice. And I just wanted to verbally add, due to also thinking it was okay to mark no on the application. So in addition to all of the facts there, and I'm not necessarily speaking to those, that reigns really high for me that was an impaired judgment to grossly miss a test to a practice that we hold for endorsement. Additionally, I would find that we're in favor of finding the violation of ARS 3232.51.16C(i), renewal application misrepresentation.
Is there a second?
I just have a clarifying question real quick, which is the L violation, just so that the record's perfectly clear, is that, are we moving that based on the misrepresentation alone? I think that's
That it's my comments this morning is based on that. Okay. Yeah, I think it's gross enough to move into that.
Egregious enough if you can't be transparent with the board you're requesting a license from.
Correct.
I would second the motion then.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Oppose? Motion carries. And moving forward, Dr. Bailey?
I am proposing that we revoke the license. I do not think that this license is granted, again, under the spirit of an endorsement, that we would endorse a license based on being misrepresenting on the application and not giving the board ample opportunity to make a decision based on her practice history. So I move that we actually just revoke the license.
Second, Kramer.
Ms. Zavala, do you want to speak to that motion?
If we could, I don't know if you still have discussion, but if you could form your motion as to offer consent agreement for the voluntary surrender of her license, and if not signed, remand to a formal hearing. Again, as a reminder, a voluntary surrender would still be considered a revocation.
Better language. Thank you. So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Bagsgard, for being present. Ms. Tully and Ms. Stark, thank you. Mr. Anderson, thank you for being here. This will conclude this matter. I think this would be a good time to take a break. So let's break. Come back at, it is 9:58. Let's come back at 10:10, please. All right, we'll come back to order. It is 10:10, and we will go to agenda item number 7F, Brianna Miller. And I believe the licensee is going to participate via phone.
The applicant, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, applicant.
Hello, this is Brianna.
Hi, Brianna. This is Patricia Dobratz, the board's chairperson. And we are just getting
Hi.
Ready. Good morning. We are getting ready to hear your matter. I have my fellow board members with me as well as board staff. And the way that this will proceed is we'll hear a brief summary from board staff, and then you will have a chance to address the board after that. You'll be given equal time or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. And we have reviewed all of the materials, so we just ask that you not repeat what we've already been able to review. And while you're not addressing the board, if you could mute your phone, we would appreciate that.
Okay.
All right. So, Ms. Zavala, a brief summary.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this matter is before you today as Ms. Miller is an applicant for our board. Just to remind everybody, pursuant to ARS 323275D, if an applicant has been notified that they are in investigation, if they request a withdrawal from that process, it needs to come before the board to determine if the conduct that's in the report would constitute unprofessional conduct. So that would be the first matter on the table based on the information that's in the report. If the members would like to allow her to withdraw her application, and as a reminder, that would mean that there would be no unprofessional conduct within the report. And if we could start with that first, Madam Chair.
Do we want to give the applicant a chance to address us then on that matter, or?
This is just actually not yet. This is really just based on the evidence that's in the report.
Or presented to us thus far.
Correct.
Dr. Chen?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Do you mind clarifying what you just said? Sorry.
Absolutely. No, it gets a little confusing. So basically in statute, in regards to it's on the first page, 323275D, an applicant can request to withdraw their application. However, if an applicant has been notified that they are under investigation, it has to come before the board for the board to determine whether they want them to allow them to withdraw their application. With that said, it would basically mean that the conduct that's in the report wouldn't constitute unprofessional conduct. One of the reasons that we intend to be putting this in statute back in 2015 was that so that people, in a sense, couldn't get wind that the board was investigating them and then choose to withdraw without any conduct.
Okay, thank you. That was helpful. So I'd like to make a motion, and I move that we deny the licensee's ability to withdraw her application.
Bailey, second.
Do we need a roll call for that?
Yes, please.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. And then to the allegations.
And at this time, Madam Chair, I'll move to the analysis. An applicant for licensure must meet requirements pursuant to ARS 323275, which includes the following. A6, not have committed any act or engaged in any conduct that would constitute grounds for disciplinary action against a licensee pursuant to this chapter. Following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violations. ARS 3232-5116L, engaging in any conduct, practice, or condition that impairs the ability of the licensee to safely and competently practice. And ARS 3232-5116V, engaging in any sexual conduct between a licensee and a client or former client. And ARS 3232-5116Y, engaging in a dual relationship with a client that could impair the licensee's objectivity or professional judgment or create a risk of harm to the client. These recommendations are made on the following. On 5/27/21, the board received applicant's LMSW application, which applicant marked yes to the background question whether applicant has been terminated from a behavioral health agency. Upon receipt, applicant's personnel records from agencies, it was noted that on 3/28/18 payroll change notice that it appeared applicant started a relationship with a client while working at agency. Furthermore, there were internal email exchanges between agency staff which indicated the client came forward and admitted he and applicant were involved in an intimate relationship which started while applicant was working a group facilitator at agency. Additionally, applicant provided a written statement to the board within her LMSW application and indicated her boyfriend, who she named by first name only, was a support in her recovery and they had been together for over 3 years. The first name of the applicant's boyfriend aligned with the first name of the client who came forward at the agency and relayed that he and applicant had been in an intimate relationship that began while she was the group facilitator at agency. Since 2/14, client has been receiving a variety of services from agency, which included inpatient services. A 5/21/19 annual behavioral health update and review summary indicated client was at risk for exploitation due to vulnerability related to limitations in freedom and economic and status opportunities. From 11/20/17 to 3/23/18, applicant facilitated a total of 72 group sessions where client was a participant. During an investigative interview with board staff, applicant represented the following. Applicant met client while he was a client at agency, and applicant was working at agency simultaneously. Client was a participant in the group's applicant facilitated at agency. While facilitating groups at agency, applicant began an inappropriate relationship with client. Applicant absolutely sees concerns with having a dual relationship with client and agrees it was inappropriate and wrong. Applicant was fully aware she was engaging in a dual relationship with client and could not provide any justification or excuse for continuing an inappropriate relationship with client. Initially, applicant represented she did not feel client was a vulnerable client, but later changed her representation to state client was, in fact, vulnerable because he was in need of service. Applicant's relationship with client did not become sexual until after her termination from agency. Applicant admits the relationship with client was harmful to client and took advantage of client. It is highly concerning that applicant not only engaged in a dual relationship with the current client, but undeniably knew she was engaging in a dual relationship and proceeded to continue her inappropriate relationship for over 3 years, even after her termination from agency. Additionally, following review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation as it relates to misrepresentation of facts. ARS 32-3251-16II, making any oral or written misrepresentation of a fact in any statements provided during investigation or disciplinary proceeding to the board. This recommendation is based on the following. A 5-27-21, the board received applicant's application. Applicant marked yes to background question regarding previous arrests and terminations from prior employers. Applicant marked no to the question around receiving any treatment over the past 5 years for alcohol use or a mental or emotional disorder that could affect her ability to competently and safely perform the essential functions of her profession. Upon review of applicant statements within her LMSW application, she indicated she had been seeing a psychiatric nurse practitioner for medication management. Upon further investigation, applicant had been involved in behavioral health services since roughly 6 of 14. Specifically, applicant's clinical records from Cope Community Services indicated that she had diagnosis of behavioral health issues. From 6/14 to 7/16, applicant received behavioral health services related to her substance use and mental health. Since 10 of 14, applicant has been receiving primary care services from El Rio Community Health Center. Since 2 of 18, applicant has been receiving behavioral health services. It is concerning that during an investigative interview with the board, the applicant indicated she marked no to the question on her application because she did not feel the services she received negatively impacted her ability to perform her job. In fact, in 3 of 18, applicant was involuntarily terminated from agency due to missing work caused by her substance use. Applicant's statements that her behavioral health services and treatment did not negatively impact her ability to perform her duties appear wholly contradictory since applicant was ultimately terminated due to her substance use preventing her from going to work and be on scheduled shifts. Furthermore, applicant misrepresented on multiple job applications with other agencies indicating she left certain agencies for personal reasons when she was in fact involuntarily terminated. Additionally, during an investigative interview with board staff, applicant acknowledged she was misleading on her job applications. Applicant represented during an investigation interview that if the employers would have asked her about her departure from previous agencies, she would have explained her termination to them. It appears applicant attempted to mislead employers by indicating she left previous employers for personal reasons instead of accurately identifying she was involuntarily terminated. Applicant further misled board during an investigative interview by representing initially that client was a huge support for her, but later within the interview reported she was not being honest. Applicant reported she and client had broken up a few months prior and they talked minimally at this point and misled board staff because she was nervous. Applicant was dishonest with board staff initially, but eventually relayed the truth regarding her current relationship status with client. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you, Ms. Zavala. Do board members have any questions for Ms. Zavala? Ms. Miller, this would be your time to address the board, and you have up to 7 minutes to do so.
She may have to unmute.
Ms. Miller, can you hear me?
She may have to unmute.
Thank you, Doc. Ms. Miller, you may still have your phone or device on mute.
Oh, hello, everybody. Good morning. I appreciate the time you're taking with me. I am overwhelmed right now. I submitted my statement for my request for a withdrawal. I was completely naive when I submitted my application for licensure. I didn't know that I was supposed to report all this unethical stuff that was going on. I do apologize. I submitted my request for waiver, and I held myself accountable for everything that I was dishonest about, and I have grown a lot of insight into my dishonesty and unethical behavior. I was completely nervous in my investigative interview and wish I would have slowed down and thought logically and just was very honest from the beginning. I really don't have anything further to say. Everything that you stated was accurate and true. And I just would like to move on and work on being a better person and a more honest person, and the mistakes that I have made in the past will never occur again. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Do board members have questions for Ms. Miller? All right, this will be our time to talk amongst ourselves, so we ask that you not interrupt. Dr. Shen?
Yes, thank you. First, I would acknowledge and thank the licensee for being here today and calling in with the additional information. after viewing the entire board report, pretty clear to me. And so before I make a motion, I want to see if any of my peers had anything to add. So I recommend that we find the licensee in violation of errors 32-3251-16L.
We need to open a complaint first.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can we open a complaint first, please?
Oh, yes. I recommend that we open up a open a complaint.
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay. And I recommend that we find the licensee in violation of ARS 32-3251-16L, ARS 32-3251-16V, ARS 32-3251-16Y, and also a violation of ARS 32-3251-16CII.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And suggestions for how to proceed?
I just recommend that we deny the application based on unprofessional conduct.
Is there a second?
Not a second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. Ms. Miller, we do appreciate you participating today. We did deny the motion to withdraw the application. We found four of the violations in the investigative report, and we've denied the application at this time. If you have further questions, you can reach out to your investigator next week.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a nice day, everyone.
Take care. Yes, to 7B, Stephanie Edmondson is the applicant here. All right. Ms. Zavala.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this matter is before you today as Ms. Edmondson's an applicant for an LPC. An applicant for licensure must meet the requirements pursuant to ARS 32-3275, which includes the following: A6, not have committed any act or engaged in any conduct that would constitute grounds for disciplinary action against a licensee pursuant to this chapter. Following review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violations: ARS 32-3251-16V, engaging in any sexual conduct between a licensee and a client or former client; ARS 32-3251-16Y, engaging in a dual relationship with a client that could impair the licensee's objectivity or professional judgment or create a risk of harm to the client; and ARS 32-3251-16L, engaging in any conduct, practice, or condition that impairs the ability of the licensee to safely and competently practice the licensee's profession. This recommendation is based on the following: 11/19/21, applicant submitted her LPC application with the board, indicating she had a previous complaint and disciplinary action against her professional license in Tennessee. Within her LPC application, applicant submitted a 9/8/20 consent order indicating the following: stipulated grounds for discipline. According to ACA Code of Ethics, applicant violated professional ethics, and applicant failed to manage and maintain boundaries and professional relationships. Applicant's license suspended until completion of boundary courses. Transcripts of the mediation agreement for the consent order indicated it was established that applicant and client had a sexual relationship between 12/19 and 1/20, while client was an active client. along with a settlement agreement for licensee to pay husband a sum of $50,000. From 11/18 to 1/20, applicant provided services to client after client was referred for individual counseling by client after and her husband's marriage and family counselor. Between 10/19 and 10/20, applicant and client exchanged electronic messages that included the following: over 200 pages of text message, screen captures, 4 inappropriate pictures, evidence of at least 2 inappropriate encounters outside of counseling sessions. Additionally, during a 12/17/21 phone conversation with board staff, applicant acknowledged to board staff that she had a sexual encounter with client. It is both highly concerning and highly unethical that applicant had a sexual relationship with a client. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you, Ms. Zavala. Do board members have any questions? Was yours, Doc?
All right. Thank you very much. To me, it seems really kind of clear and simple. I will first move to open a complaint.
For a second.
Bailey, a second.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. And then I will move to find the violations as stipulated in the analysis and the report of the board staff.
There's a second.
Oh. And just to articulate it, RS 32, 32, 51, 16V, engaging in sexual contact. RS 32, 51, 16Y, engaging in a dual relationship with the client, and 32, 32, 51, 16L, engaging in any conduct, practice, or condition that impairs the ability of the licensee to safely and competently practice the licensee's profession. I move those violations.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Potter.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. And the disciplinary action. This is an applicant for licensure. I move that we deny the application.
For a second.
Not a second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
So carries. Bella, do we want to call the last disciplinary matter, or do we want to move forward and then come back to it?
I think we should move forward and get back to it. I believe that she's on her way.
All right. So, disciplinary matter that we'll be coming back to, but at this time, we will move to agenda item number 10, our applications for licensure. And can you speak to how many licenses have been issued?
Since our last board meeting, we've issued 284 licenses.
And looking at denials, do you want to start with counseling?
The Counseling Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of the following individuals and recommends their denial for licensure: 4 applications based on a failure to pass the required examination, 2 applications based on a failure to take the required examination, and 3 applications based on a failure to meet minimum requirements. Total denials of 9.
Is there a second?
Coonrod, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
The Marriage and Family Therapy Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of the following individuals and recommends their denial for licensure: 1 application based on a failure to pass the required exam, 2 applications based on a failure to meet the minimum requirements, for a total of 3 denials.
Is there a second?
Second. Kramer.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Dr. Hennigan?
Sure. The Social Work Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of the following individuals and recommends their denial for licensure: 8 based on failure to pass the required examination, 6 based on a failure to take the required examination, for a total of 14 denials.
Davis seconds.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Somebody take lead on Substance Abuse Committee?
The Substance Abuse Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of 3 individuals and denied recommends denial for licensure. One, application based on a failure to take the required examination, and two applications based on a failure to meet minimum requirements, for a total of three denials, and I move it.
There a second.
Bailey, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. And we'll go to agenda item number 12, report from treasurer. And
yes, we have reviewed the report, the cash flow report, and I find no problem with it. And so unless there is an issue, I move that we approve the report.
Do we need two separate motions, Mr. Waller, or can we?
Two separate motions?
January.
January is going to be tabled.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So there's a motion for A, December. Is there a second?
Second, Trotter.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
And then we'll be tabling B, the January. All right, and it looks back to our disciplinary matters. So we'll go back to agenda item number 7. Ms. Hasseltine, you would come forward, please. And if you press the button on the microphone, it should turn green, and that'll indicate that it's on in case you want to address the board. There you go. Oh, it's good. Yep. So licensee is present. The way that we'll proceed is board staff will have a chance to present a report to us, and then you'll have a chance to address the board after that if you'd like. We do have all of the materials in the matter. Ms. Zavala?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. In 12 of 21, licensee contacted the board and self-reported a driving under the influence charge. At our January meeting, the board offered the licensee an interim consent agreement as well as issued a substance abuse evaluation. In subsequent conversations, licensee declined the interim consent agreement and offered to voluntarily surrender her license. So the matter, the consent agreement before you today is finding a violation of ARS 3232516L, engaging in any conduct, practice, or condition that impairs the ability of the licensee to safely and competently practice the licensee's profession. That is going to be an attachment to your report, and again, this would be a voluntary surrender of the licensee's license.
Do board members have any questions for Ms. Zavala? Ms. Hasseltine, you would have up to 5 minutes to address the board if you wish to do so.
Thank you. The reason I came today is I want to do two things. I want to thank you, and I want to set the record straight. I know a couple of you from having been an auditor from Magellan, so it's just good to see you and your faces again. I at one time sat where you're sitting on the Counseling Credentialing Committee. During that time, when I was going to start the work, I was in a period of depression, and one of my symptoms was crying a lot. My husband said, "Wife, you can't cry when you go."
Can we trade one out, Ms. Ball? I think the battery died. We'll get you a new one.
So I didn't ever think I'd be on this side of the table since I served on that side of the table. Another thing that I never thought would happen is I used to be a behavioral health tech in a residential facility for SMI folks. And I had depression, and my worst nightmare is that I would become SMI. And then that happened in 2015. So those are just some things that didn't work out or that happened that I didn't expect. I want to thank you for your steadfastness and consistency. The reason I didn't accept the first consent agreement is at that time, I didn't believe that there was any question of whether I could practice safely and competently. I'd ask some of my friends who were previous counselors, do you think I can practice safely and competently? However, when I asked my sponsor, she said, well, yeah, I think you could today, but if you were hungover, if you keep drinking, no. And I kept trying to realize whether or not I was an alcoholic. And the letters I wrote you, I was firmly believing I wasn't. And it talked about not being able to control your drinking. The week before my first meeting with you, I didn't want to drink because I said, I'm not going to drink that week because I want to be mentally clear for the board meeting and to present well. I drank 3 days in a row, and I drank more each time. I prayed and prayed, God, if I am an alcoholic, please show me the truth. And if I'm an alcoholic, please give me the desire to stop drinking. That came the Wednesday before January's meeting. So when I talked to you on Friday, I was barely sober 2 days. Now I've received my 30-day chip. However, I didn't decline the consent agreement because I didn't want to do what you asked for a year. I really looked at, do I want to continue counseling? I'm 60 years old. Counseling's always been hard on me. I love it. I'm good at it. But with depression, it's emotional work. I also was evaluated by vocational rehab for private practice, and they said, if you do it, you can do it, but do it real part-time. So for the past year, I had one client. So when I did an analysis of the finances, the expenses of being a professional were higher than the money I would take in at BetterHelp. So that's why I wrote to you asking to surrender my license. This is embarrassing that I'm crying, but like I tell people all the time, don't apologize for crying. It's just the opposite of laughing. So anyway, I didn't decline the consent agreement out of sour grapes. I declined because I realized it's not healthy for me to be a counselor. I really, really appreciate your patience, and you helped me in this journey of coming to sobriety. I work as a sponsor, and at my SMI clinic, I enrolled in integrated dual diagnosis, substance abuse, and mental health care for my depression and alcoholism. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you listening.
We appreciate you being here and sharing with us.
I would just like to congratulate her on her 30 days.
Should I go back there now?
No, you're good right here. Okay. Yeah, we'll just take a minute. This will be our time to talk amongst ourselves.
Yes, I first want to just take a moment to thank Ms. Passeltine for being here today. I think that your candid, open response to the board kind of shows how much reflection that you've had since the last meeting, and I just want to honestly congratulate you for that insight and that reflection on your part. With that being said, I would like to make a motion, and the motion is to accept the proposed signed modified consent agreement.
For a second.
Hennigan, second.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Lynette Hennigan.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
You should be very proud of yourself, and best of luck to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your service to Arizona.
Take care.
Is it okay to leave the meeting now?
Yep, your matter is concluded. You can go. Thank you. We will go to item number 13.
Can we go ahead and skip to 14 and come back to
absolutely. 13, we will go to 14, our request for extension of an active status. 14A, Barbara Brown.
Members of the board, just a reminder, when an individual is licensed, they can go on inactive status. The first time they do that, it's something where they don't have to have a reason, and board staff can approve it. The second time, it has to come before the board, and per statute has to be one of the following: for health reasons, for a situation beyond the licensee's control, and for military. At this time, we have Ms. Brown before us, and without going into her details of her situation, but we do have a note from the doctor in regards to her being a caregiver for her spouse. That's all I have, unless you have questions for me.
Any questions? It seems to be appropriate given the information we have. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved, Otter.
Is there a second?
Chen, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And then 14B, Van Warmer.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, this is just like the last one, however, the situation is a little bit different. This is in regards to an individual that is staying home stay at home with her children. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions for me.
Any questions for Ms. Zavala? This one doesn't seem to rise to the exceptions, unless somebody wants otherwise. Is there a motion to deny?
Bailey, so moved.
Second.
Chen, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And then, do we want to go back to 14 or 13? Do you need to take a break?
I don't think so. We can move forward. We'll jump around a little bit.
Absolutely, it's your show now.
So first, 13C update on the counseling contract. I was excited to relay a couple months ago that Senator Bartow was going to sponsor that bill. For whatever reason, that bill got drafted and never got dropped. After conversations I had with Senator Bartow, their focus was on something a little different this year. So there will be no bill for the compact for counseling this year. A little disappointing. Just want to let everybody out there know for the public, if this is something that you want for the state of Arizona, you really need to lobby for it and work with the Arizona Counseling Association so that hopefully next year we'll be there.
Do we know, Ms. Zavala, it's the first 10 states that sign on, will have a member or representative in the committee. Do we know where they're at?
Currently there's three that actually have it in legislation, but there's about, I believe, 12 other states that have it in their legislation for this year. So there's a good chance that we will not be part of that.
Thank you for the update.
Next, we'll go to agenda item D, update on 2022 legislative bills. 2022, that's so hard to say out loud. So just as a reminder to the board, we no longer have a lobbyist. We actually haven't had a lobbyist in about 4 years. I'm your assigned registered lobbyist, but I can't lobby. So I just want to remind the members that this is part of my responsibility, and it's a difficult time of the year. As we're in session right now, to monitor any bills that will affect our licensees as well as our board. And right now there's approximately about 20 that I'm following. Don't want to get into the particulars today because it's a roller coaster. I try myself to only look once a week because it's super overwhelming. There's already a couple that have already been killed since they have been introduced. So just want to let you know that I am aware of that. If you happen to, you know, hear of something or see something and you're not sure, feel free to just email it to me. I'll add it to my list. Chances are I probably do have it, but things do slip in, especially now with striker bills and so forth coming forward. So, all right. So an update on the 2023 budget. So we submit our budget every year by September 1st. Ms. Yabu, it was her first budget submittal, and it was a complicated one because we actually submitted for what we call a funding issue, not so much that we needed the money, but we needed staff, and since we were only allocated for 17 FTE, we had to go out and hire temporary and use from other boards and so forth. So Ms. Yabu put together a funding issue that is going to allow us July 1st of this year to hire three more FTEs. So this is really good. In addition, I think it gave us $223,000 to be able to do that, as well as some other things. So this is not, budgeting works really weird when it comes to this. We're not asking, there will be no more money asked of our licensees. In fact, hopefully next year we'll reduce more fees again. So just want to let you know that was a huge accomplishment by Ms. Yabu, and it's a good thing for our board, because when you see our staff accomplishments, you will see that we are drowning, but yet we're being successful in making things forward. So we're pretty excited about that.
Thank you both.
Mm-hmm. And then an update on the database. I know I shared with you a couple months ago, I believe. Just kind of wanted to, there's really not a whole lot of update other than we are officially assigned contracts, plural, and we're moving forward with working with Ventia to put that in place. It's going to be a long haul. It's going to be a lot of work. It's not a push of a button and everything gets migrated over. That part might be a push of a button, but if any of you who know me, when we engage in something like this, I want, I say Cadillac style, but I'm going to change it and say BMW style. I want the best of the best. I want it to work for our staff so that we can, you know, be able to facilitate our processes a little bit better, as well as for our licensees, because this will be kind of an interactive thing where our licensees will actually be able to go into a portal and upload and download and move things around. So it's pretty exciting. We're looking at May. I feel confident that they're going to be on time. But again, it's a lot of work. We're literally going to be starting to meet weekly with different expert people within our office on what they want things to be able to do. Again, I have to tell you that there are certain things that we do. We have to check 10 different boxes on 10 different screens to get that one thing. So this is going to be an exciting process for us to be able to streamline all of that. Next is just a brief update. I participated in the what they call FARB. It's the Federation of Associations of Regulatory Board Conference. And I always like to share this because it's probably one of my favorite conferences because it's not discipline related. I do a lot of conferences as it relates to social work and counseling and everything else. This one is all regulatory boards. I actually did it online for 2 days, which was really difficult, by the way. Especially that second day, which was a Saturday. But I really enjoyed it. I was a little disappointed I didn't make it in person this year. But it's just exciting to be able to hear how, not exciting, maybe not the best word, but all regulatory boards have the same kinds of issues that we have, right? We're always trying to uphold the profession. We're always trying to make a name. We're always trying to protect the public. So it's pretty exciting. I have to say FARB had a great agenda and had some really good speakers, and, you know, as it doesn't help me necessarily with learning about our discipline, but I think it overall makes me a better executive director to be able to just understand how all of that works. So then next, we see all my staff, all of our staff is coming in now because I want them to be part of our accomplishments, but I think I'm going to go ahead and move forward with a few other things. First, this one is actually an action vote, and I did reach out to Madam Chair for permission because the Association of Social Work Boards wanted an answer from me. But what it is review consideration and possible action regarding Ms. Zavala's nomination to serve as chair to the Regulatory Education and Leadership Committee with the Association of Social Work Boards. As you all are aware, and I know Mr. Davis is very much aware of this, I was appointed last year and accepted to be part of that committee, and apparently I worked too hard because now this year they're asking me to be the chair of the committee. So, again, Mr. Bratz gave me permission to accept that nomination, but it does need a board vote for me to move forward with that.
Davis. Seemed appropriate in her free time.
Davis moves it.
Bailey, yeah. Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Post. Congratulations, Ms. Zavala.
Yes. It's a lot of work, though.
That sounds scary. The next is, the agenda item is for review, consideration, and possible action regarding Ms. Zavala and Mr. Brott's invitation to attend a fully funded board meeting training offered by the Associations of Social Work Boards. Just a little bit of background there. Both myself and Mr. Brott's have been, because I'm part of the REAL committee, and Mr. Brott's was asked to come to another conference that's in April, and based on that, thought it would be a good idea for us to attend this board training. With that said, Mr. Brotz is unable to go, and so I reached out to the Association of Social Work Boards. They've given us 3 spots, and this year, based on new members to our board, Ms. Hennigan and Mr. Trotter would like to attend. They're actually currently registered. With that said, we do need a board vote to enable them to be able to go. It's going to be on March 24th, Thursday through Saturday, and it's going to be in San Diego.
Davis moves it.
Bailey second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Really excited to have a professional and a public member go. I think that'll be great feedback to bring back to us.
And now with all my staff here, I might as well just move into this. So the next is review, consideration, and possible action regarding Ms. Zavala's work schedule. So kind of some interesting things have developed in my personal life, and I wasn't originally going to share, but it just makes sense to share at this time. But my son has moved to Washington State, and I don't know when or what or how, but my intent over the next year is to figure out how I can visit once a month and work from there for a week out of each month. And with that, I do need permission from my bosses to be able to consider something like that. It seems simple because it seems like nowadays everybody's, you know, working from home. I don't work from home. With that said, you know, once or twice a week on occasion, I may. But this is a little different because it's out of state. So if I get a call and I have to go across the street, it's not going to work out real well. But I would be, you know, cognizant of that and be aware of that. But I just wanted to see if I could get permission to move forward with that, if that's something that I chose to do over the next few months.
And
board meetings from Seattle in the summer.
Could we all go to that?
Right.
I can't imagine a concern.
I can remember times when I had to participate on the board from North Carolina. So I definitely want to offer a motion to approve that.
I won't be missing a board meeting, just for the record. But
I just want to, I don't necessarily think limiting that time frame.
Right.
Just that whatever seems reasonable for Ms. Zavala and,
trust
and her staff.
Her
absolutely. So I just want to go on record and say I would like us to not the time limit.
Agreed.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
All right, so as you notice, I had all my staff come down because I feel like oftentimes I get to sit in these board meetings and hear all the accolades from our members, and as much as it makes me feel good, I don't think that I'm able to share with them as much of how you appreciate them and the work that they do. So I really, you know, I know that this is a short meeting, but I'm probably going to take the next 30 minutes. I'm going to talk about accomplishments. And I think it's important. So to my knowledge, the staff members haven't received the PowerPoint presentation either. So we've passed it out to them so we can kind of go through it together so they can see, because it's not just one person. It's not just 2 people. It's everybody. And it's not just the staff. It's our committee members. It's our board members. So before I get to the staff accomplishments, I do want to do a little bit of an update on staff changes. Just as a little side, you know, for a long time we had a lot of the same people, and over the last year or so we've had some changes. And as much as it's been difficult, all of those people that left us, they went for, you know, different opportunities, possibly what they would say better opportunities. So with that said, we've had to, you know, make some adjustments, made some changes. I've done some insight for myself and have tried to figure out what it looks like for me to be here for another, you know, 5 or 6 years. And so I've made some changes internally, a little bit different than what it's looked like before, and don't want to go into the nuts and bolts because typically I don't talk about, you know, the hirings and people leaving. However, it is important, and I've always found that it really important for the leadership team to make sure that you're aware who that is. And I wanted to let you know after 16 years of service with the board, Alma has been promoted to assistant director. We're changing things up a little bit. As you see Jarrett here today with us, he has been promoted to the investigator manager. So he is working with the investigative team and leading that team. So, and so then there's some other changes. We did upload the organizational chart because I think sometimes you guys probably wonder who's who and who's what and how did that work. We even added our three new people that we're going to be getting on July 1st. So that's pretty exciting. We also have, for the first time ever, I have an executive assistant, Vaughn Becker. She just started with us this past Monday. Part of myself, president. But anyways, so we're pretty excited about it. And again, all of the staff is here today. And at this time, I'm going to go ahead and go into the staff accomplishments. As you remember, too, this is part of the annual review for myself in the sense where next month we're going to be bringing a topic to the board in regards to my evaluation that will be completed in May. And not that it has anything to do with our accomplishments, but this is just part of the beginning steps to that. So does everybody, all the staff, have one? All right. So this is in regards to 2021. And we're going to start with the applications. Again, I know you all have it on there. It looks a lot prettier than our paper we have here. If you have any questions as I go through this, please feel free to ask them. Some of these are statistics and some of these are accomplishments just based on what I think that the members like to see. Applications received, 2,784. And there it'll show you the difference of the types of licenses that we've received. The next one, if you can see, there was an increase from last year from 17.6% of applications. If you look from 2018, the increase of applications is significant. Again, another reason why we needed to have more staff. Not that we aren't able to do the job and not that we aren't able to do it well, but definitely it's important to us that we maintain issuing those licenses as speedy as we can. Pretty significant increase. I think some of it's because of the endorsement and people coming from out of state, but I'm going to say again, I think a lot of it is because some of the DHS licensed agencies are mandating that people get licensed. We are seeing people that have had a master's degree for some time now coming forward and getting licensed. Application by type, it's the next one. The universal recognition, we all know what that is. In a sense, you have to have the same level of license, same discipline in another state. However, you do have to have Arizona residency, and you have had to have had that license for a minimum of 1 year. So we do have a handful that do that. In addition, you can see our endorsement is still very, very robust. I said in the initial, you know, set of things, we didn't really need the universal recognition, but our endorsement is very similar, except you don't have to have Arizona residency. So a lot of these people that have endorsement may or may not live in Arizona, but they're able to provide services to clients in Arizona. And next, in regards to licenses, the active count at the end of the year was 14,868. I will tell you that the very next slide is at 60%, and this is the same every year. It just never changes. It's kind of interesting to me. 60% of all of those licenses are at the independent level. I always like to point out the fact that even though the social workers always have just a few more, they're significantly less when it comes to being independently level licensed. I think the primary reason for that is that some people that get their master's degree and get their LMSW choose to go into agencies where they're not providing psychotherapy, maybe the schools, maybe hospitals, maybe prison settings, maybe working for the state where they are required to be licensed, but they're not providing psychotherapy. They're doing more referrals and case management. I don't know any other explanation for that. Would you agree, Ms. Hennigan?
They also have to take a second exam, so.
Correct. Correct.
That little piece of it.
So the next is clinical supervisors. We currently have 3,013 on our clinical, on our registry for supervisors. Please note, you do not have to be on the registry to provide clinical supervision. This is something that went into effect to add to, you know, the workload. For the lack of, you know, I don't know how else to say it, but it's true. In 2015, there's this registry, and basically if you want to be a clinical supervisor, you can submit your CEUs, and we have a designated staff member that reviews them to make sure that they meet, and then that is placed on our website. It is a good public tool in the sense where people that are looking at supervisors can look to see if they're in compliance. And I always tell them it's not mandated to be on the registry, but if you have a supervisor that wants to supervise you and they're not on you there, you might want to have them prove to you that they meet the requirements. And the reason I say that is because there's nothing worse than a supervisor not to have the education, and after 2 years of hard work, an applicant gets denied. We've seen it happen. Thank goodness it hasn't been lately. But before the registry, we actually have seen it a lot. So if you look on there, those are the current percentage of the different disciplines that are on that. Next, we have our favorite, supervised private practice. So supervised private practice came into effect in 2018, just as a 2019. Just as a reminder, this was being proactive to something that was going to happen, and that is to allow the associate level to practice at the independent level. So basically, you can be in a private practice, and then you're required to not only have clinical supervision, but direct supervision. And that supervisor for that particular individual basically is responsible for your practice. And so it's a pretty big responsibility. We have 183 participants. I think that's a good thing. The fact that we almost have, you know, 7,000 associate level. I'm glad that there's not more than that. This is something that is growing a little bit more these days. I also tell you, when we do the rules moving forward, we're going to make a few changes to that as well.
Quick question for you.
Yes.
Do you know what we had in supervised private practice last year? How many participants from last year?
You know, I don't have that in front of me, but it wasn't, I want to say it was around 150.
Okay, so yeah. Like 30 or so, that's not too bad.
Yeah, and you know, and the interesting thing about this too is that I would say the majority, it may be 51%, but the majority of them have another job. I mean, those of you that are in private practice, you don't just get to open up a door and put your name on it and start seeing clients. It takes a long time to develop that referral source and so forth. So a lot of these have another job where they're acquiring hours, but they're kind of in a sense jump starting their private practice because that's what they want to do moving forward. Not all, but I would suspect the majority of them.
Thank you.
So next is renewals and verifications. So renewals, as you know, for those of you that are licensed, every 2 years you have to submit your renewal online. Again, we have a designated person that reviews all of that information. And if you look at the percentage, I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer based on the fact that we have more licensees, more applications, we're going to have more renewals. I do like this slide, and probably for people like Mr. Davis, you can kind of appreciate it as well. We used to have our even years were always much, much higher because board went into licensure in 2004. So every 2 years was an even year, it was much higher. So here, you know, how many years later, we're finally like catching up. So I find that kind of interesting. So verifications went up 60% this last year. What that looks like is when somebody wants to get licensed in another state, that other state is going to require our board to verify that they have a license. One would like to think they could go to our website and look that they're licensed. It's not quite that easy. There's like this whole process, this paperwork that they fill out and they send in, it can be very time-consuming. And obviously with the way the world is now with telehealth, that's why we're up 60%. That's why we were up 56% last year. Before that, it wasn't that common for people to have multiple licenses and moving around so fluid. So, again, a lot of work that takes place. And, again, they're depending on us to get that verification out because they can't get licensed in that other state until it's verified. Okay.
Next is staff productivity and achievements. I'll go through these really quickly. I always find this interesting, 34,099 phone calls that we got. We're not a call center. We're just 17 people sitting in a sitting in a room. So we get a lot of calls. If you look at the average that we get a week and the average we get in a day, it's a lot. And these are not 1 or 2 minute phone calls.
And that doesn't include emails.
Yeah, exactly. It does not include emails. And then, of course, you know, we have our contact information change. Anytime somebody moves their personal address or their work address, they have to report that, so we have to process that. 977 fingerprints sent to DPS for processing. Over 1,016 clinical supervisor training compliance reviews. We talked about how we had over 3,000 on our registry. Again, there's a process. They submit it to us. We have to review it, and then we reach out to them with a letter letting them know they're in compliance. We issued 2,678 licenses, 128 public records requests. So this is an interesting thing that you all may not realize. Anybody has the ability to get Dr. Shen's application file if they want it. Now, mind you, there's a number of things they can't get out of it because it would be confidential, but they do have that ability to do that. And it's, you know, stipulated what's confidential or not. So we do get public records requests sometimes for people in lawsuits. Oftentimes, they don't like what they get because they don't get to get part of the investigation and those types of things. But that's a pretty long process because if it's a third party, you have to go through every single page and redact what they don't get and what's not public. As you saw today, 76 inactive status requests. That's going to be the initial, and that's going to be the second. 98 duplicate license requests, over 40 public meetings set up and follow up. So our board has 12. We have 4 committees. Some meet monthly, some meet every 6 weeks, some meet every 2 months. So there's a lot of meetings that take place. And then, of course, the incoming email boxes. I can't even imagine how many hundreds of thousands that we get there. In addition to that, just the achievements, last year, that's right. We did this a little different this year because last year was our first year we presented this way. So last year we had goals, right? And so these are updates on goals. We have successfully migrated the board's network to Google Drive, and we all love Google. I don't think any of us love Google. It's awful, but we're there. And we didn't have a choice, and so we love every second of it. Switch to Arizona Performance for staff evaluation and coaching. I'm just going to say that's pending. And then continue community outreach. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but that's probably the one and only good thing that I think has come from the pandemic is the ability to, particularly myself, be able to get in front of people via Zoom, nights, weekends, days, whatever it is, associations, agencies, sometimes just a group of people that have questions. So we continue to do that community outreach. I think it's important for the board to continue to educate. That's why we're here. Obviously, we're a regulatory board, but on the same hand, people don't like to read them like I do at night. So community outreach is really just about making sure people know the rules, but also letting them know what the board does. Often in my presentations, I share about ethical boundary violations that we've incurred. And, of course, people are shocked, but I also think they need to know why we're here. It's really important to know that, I mean, just by the cases we had today, we have some egregious things that are happening, and that's why we're here to regulate. Last year, our goal was to seek 2 additional FTE. Thanks to Ms. Yabu, we got 3. So that's pretty exciting. Convert additional applications to online forms. That's all been completed for those of you that go on and do any kind of our verification forms, supervision forms, clinical supervision applications. It's all been done online. And then begin workflow mapping for database conversion. So we're doing that a little bit different. We didn't do a map flow that was going to cost us $200,000. Instead, we hired an agency, Fentia, that is going to basically work with us, as I mentioned, weekly to develop that flow so that we can have a better system. So I would say we accomplished everything. So these are just some things that I myself involved in. I think most of you are aware of these, but I think it's important to share. I'm still on the advisory board for the Arizona Health Workforce Data System.
And that was invited by Senator Carto. Carter. She's no longer a senator, but that was a couple of years ago. I was appointed to the governor for the Arizona Substance Abuse Partnership. I've been going on, I think, 3 years for that. The Healthcare Professional Workforce Data Repository Advisory Committee, that was from DHS. The COVID-19 Mental Health Disaster Response Group, that's kind of an interesting group. I don't know if you all know much about that, but that's really for people like yourself. They're for professionals that have had to go through this, not so much your clients or other people, but professionals that are dealing with their own, you know, personal issues or professional issues in which COVID has presented to them. I'm still the administrator representative for the American Association of State County Boards. Been doing that for a couple of years. There's a rumor I'm going to be nominated for secretary next year. Not sure that I'm going to take that, but that's just a rumor. And then, as you know, last year I was nominated for the Social Work Regulatory Education and Leadership Committee, and today would be for that'll be for next year, but that would be for the chair. And then I'm also involved in the Regulatory Excellence Committee in regards to telehealth and so forth. So in some other achievements, I won't go through all these. You see them in front of you. But again, COVID has allowed us to get into a variety of schools and organizations to talk about the board, talk about why we're here, and to educate about rules. And one of the things I did do, which you all probably thought was probably funny, but I did it anyways, I did include an evaluation from the Human Service Council. This is actually a quarterly, a little bit more formal than what I typically do. Training that I do for them, and I get this evaluation after we're done, and I always appreciate it. As I always tell them, I appreciate constructive and I appreciate the positive, but at the end of the day, if you read the responses that people put in there, they just appreciate the board being able to be there for them and to have conversations with them. And then last but not least is completed investigations. So this was always kind of my, probably a little bit of my passion, because when I came on board, and I think that Mr. Davis and Ms. Coonrod will remember this, and hopefully you all remember this from last year, but when I came on board, it was actually in 2010, I became executive director in 15, but we were working off a attorney general's audit from 2012. And there were actually no findings other than the fact of our complaint processes. I think we were processing complaints over 500 days. We also didn't have the ability to prioritize. So if you had a sex with client, you might take somebody that has a documentation issue first. If you notice, if we have a sex with client, you're going to see it within the month, right? Or substance abuse. So we've been able to do that. So this is always a big deal to me. Not that these other things are not accomplishments, but I think this just kind of reiterates all the hard work that we've done over the years. It's also going to show you complaints received. It's up 28% from last year. Again, I'll tell you, it's not because there's more complaints, because we have more licensees. So it's just going to look that way every year. I will tell you from my experience, and I think for those of you on the board, the complaints are definitely getting more egregious. But I think the complaints every year, we're just going to see them get more based on, you know, it's just relative based on how many more licensees we have. Closed complaints, I'm pretty excited about this. As you all know, we had a change in staff, and we brought Ian Ehrman on board, and we talked about him last month. I was really pleased to see that we were up 6% in closing out complaints from last year, from the previous year, because when you lose somebody in a leadership position, sometimes it takes a little while just to feel better and to get in a better spot. So pleased that we were able to complete, you know, as many and a few more. Administratively completed cases. So what these are, this first set of closed complaints, these are actually complaints, for lack of a better term, have numbers on them. So they have a complaint number and they come before the board. Administratively completed cases mean they didn't come before the board. You're going to find these on renewals when they answer yes to being terminated, or maybe something else they should have reported earlier throughout the year. We also have self-reports, people reporting DUIs, arrest for domestic violence. And then we have our application piece, where, as we talked about earlier today, there's 9 questions they have to answer. And if one of them is yes, the credentialist does not investigate them. It goes right to investigations. Many of them get completely, you know, signed off on really quick. They were arrested in 2017 for underage drinking. We don't care.
But many of them, we have to subpoena their employment records, or we have to get the police records. We have to determine that the reason they were terminated was for not a good fit or documentation and not because they had an inappropriate relationship with their client. So if you see here, again, significant increase. Last year in applications alone, we had 543. 2 years ago, 543. This year, 722. Again, more applications, more investigations. So one of my favorite slides, I kind of talked about this earlier. In 2014, our average processing time was 524 days to process a complaint. This year was 179 days. I will tell you, I told you this last year, but I'm going to say it again. It's not going to get much less than that. It's just not. It doesn't matter how many people we have or how hard we work, unless you guys want to work, you know, Saturdays and Sundays, it's just not going to happen. But pretty excited because in 2012, the goal from the Auditor General, and based on a bill that's currently on the table, they're going to mandate that all complaints be processed at an average of 180 days for each board. So we're right there. But I will tell you, it takes a lot of work to get there. A lot of work. So pretty excited about that. People are always interested in this stat. I think I use this a lot, and now that this presentation has been presented to the board, I will be able to use this not only to share with our committees, but to share with the public, because I think sometimes people think, oh my gosh, if you go before the board, you're going to get in trouble. It just doesn't quite work that way. I think you all know that by being part of this. 34% of the complaints that we had last year completely were outright dismissed, all right? And then we have 13% that were dismissed with a letter of concern. Those are going to be the ones where their documentation just wasn't where it needed to be. And then we have the non-disciplinary, and those are also dismissed with a non-disciplinary consent agreement. Again, typically is going to be for documentation or maybe just something that if the licensee were to continue to do it, end up in a disciplinary action. So out of all of those complaints, 42%, we had disciplinary action. And I'll say it again because I think it's important. Each year they just get more and more egregious. They really, really do, and I don't really know how to prevent that. But
Isabella, I'm sorry to interrupt. This is posted on the website, correct?
It's not posted yet. I wanted to make sure that the board members saw it first. So right now it's the year before is up.
Okay.
So either today or Monday we will get that uploaded, and then it will also be presented to our four disciplinary committees. And, of course, anytime I can utilize it in presenting, I will use it as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh. And then pending complaints, this is kind of an ouch. We have 98. Last year we had quite a few less. Again, more licensees, more complaints, same amount of staff. So, you know, we need to stay within that 180-day processing time frame. We need to continue to make sure that we process them based on priority cases. We're really good about that. Staff is really cognizant of that as well when cases come in. Oftentimes I read everyone that comes in myself. And assign them, but even then sometimes they might get reduced to a lower priority, or sometimes they get increased to a higher priority depending on what we find as we start investigating. And then the 2022 goals. So we're going to onboard the new FTE positions as awarded. Again, July 1st is when we can bring them on board. We're already working on expanding our space in our suite, as we're already maxed out, so that's going to take a little bit of work, or we'll be sharing cubicles. And then we're going to continue to do community outreach. We began discussion in regards to the rulemaking process, and I want to be careful when I say that because we actually can't start that process until A, the board approves it, and then B, the governor's office approves it. But we have started, and we've gotten a lot of rules that we want to modify and change. I mentioned that a couple months ago. If any members had some they wanted to consider to send them, hopefully by next month we might bring it forward to the members for approval to send off to the governor's office. And that's, as you know, is a long process. That means this time next year we might be having new rules. complete database conversion to new web-based portal. We talked about that. And then update website platform. We're on an old platform because for years we fought to go on the new platform that the state requires. I think we're probably one of the few agencies in the entire state that's not on their platform. And there was a variety of reasons, but I think we've come to the point that we're not going to have a choice, so we're going to be moving, so that's going to probably look a little bit different. So when that time comes, we'll let you know, and it's going to be really important, even probably not that the public members don't care, but really important for the professional members to take a look at that, because sometimes things make sense to us, and it doesn't to others. So we're going to have as not much control over what that looks like, but on the same hand, it's really about making sure that that information is readily available to our licensees. So, and that's all that I have. And I just, I wear my heart on my sleeve, but these guys are amazing every day. I'm going to cry. No, I'm not going to cry. But this is that time. I hope that they know, you know, on a regular basis, I try to tell them how wonderful they are. But seeing something like this with the same number of staff and the changes that we've had over the last year is amazing. Yes. You guys definitely make our jobs much easier. We appreciate you. This is my second round of serving on the board, and it continues to get more and more efficient. And I know how responsive you all are to the professionals and to the complainants and to us as members, and we can't thank you enough. Congratulations to Elma and Jarrett as well. Much deserved, and I'm really excited to see what you guys do moving forward.
As one of the historians, I tell you, it is so much better now. Everything is so much better, so much easier. I haven't gotten a box of information, a box of material to read. Haven't gotten that in years. So thank you, one and all.
All right. We will go to 15 future agenda items. Is there anything that board members would like to have Ms. Savala put on the agenda for next month? All right. And call for public comment. Anybody who wishes to address the board could now have a chance to address the board for up to 5 minutes. We're not able to give feedback or engage in discussion, but if there's anything that you'd like to present, this would be the time to do that. Is there anybody who wishes to address the board? All right. So last but not least, our next meeting is Friday, March 11th. Ms. Savala, are we good in terms of knowing who's going to be here?
If we could get a confirmation today, I'm not aware of anybody missing the March meeting.
Anybody not going to be able to? All right, if something changes, please let Ms. Savala know as soon as possible. And look at, we are getting out before noon. We haven't done that in a while. So, is there a motion to adjourn?
Trotter.
Is there a second?
Bailey, second.
All right. You guys all have a great weekend. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, one and all.